Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we will stop in Chicago to speak with Jordan Malley of Locked On Bulls after Chicago signed Jabari Parker to a two-year, $40 million contract. We'll get his reaction on that signing. We'll go to New York to speak with James Marceda of Locked On Knicks about the stellar performances of Mitchell Robinson and Kevin Knox in the Las Vegas Summer League. And lastly, we'll go to Brooklyn to speak with Josh Bass of Locked On Nets about the moves that the Nets pulled over the last couple of days, acquiring draft picks, making trades, and generally just trying to reshape this team. So lots of talk about the Nets, about the Knicks, and about the Bulls. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome to another Monday edition of the Locked On NBA podcast. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I also host the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I am the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. Las Vegas Summer League is winding down. Free agency is just about in the books, but things are still happening across the NBA. So we're going to cover those big stories that have happened over the last few days and talk about the ramifications for those individual teams and league wide as well. So let's get to it. Let's bring in one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast, Jordan Malley. The Bulls have made some interesting moves over the past week or so, but in the last couple of days, we heard the news that they have signed Jabari Parker to a two-year, $40 million contract. The second year of that contract is a team option after the Milwaukee Bucks rescinded their qualifying offer. I think opinion is divided on the Parker signing. What's your take on it, and what's the general opinion you're getting from Bulls fans on Jabari Parker coming home to his hometown of Chicago?
Yeah, I think it's funny because we talk about interesting moves. I mean, last weekend we were talking about Zach LaVine re-signing. This weekend we're talking about Jabari Parker, and I think we did an episode on Locked On Bulls late in the afternoon on Friday before any of these reports were even credible as far as Parker's interest for the Bulls and whether or not he was actually going to sign. My personal opinion before the signing happened and before we knew the contract details was that this signing didn't really make a whole lot of sense for the Bulls in terms of the direction that they were going in, committing a lot of money to Zach LaVine, who just came off an ACL. Deciding whether or not to play Jabari Parker at the three is something that they're going to really have to consider. Right now, they're pitching it as he can play the three, and that's where they're going to start him. I think I was a little bit surprised at first that this was a legitimate offer. I thought this might have been a negotiating tactic for the Bulls to pull off a move in order to acquire a salary dump either from Oklahoma City or from Denver. And clearly it wasn't, and there was interest on both sides, and it seems like the Bulls are confident that Parker can play the three. I really don't think that he's going to be able to play the three. I hope that somehow, some way, there's a miracle that happens and him and Zach LaVine can figure things out on defense and can consistently score. That's the only way I see it working. I like the two-year deal and a team option for the second year. I think that makes the deal significantly better than maybe what we would have thought, which was a two or a possibly three-year deal with only one option on that third year. So I think it's a good play. If the Bulls, which it's clear now, the Bulls had no interest in taking on a salary dump and acquiring additional draft picks, and that wasn't the route that they wanted to go as far as this rebuild is. And with Parker, it gives you basically a one-year tryout. And if the Bulls weren't going to take on a salary dump, that $20 million would have just sat there basically, and that's what they had open to spend on the market. So I don't hate it. I can't buy into the fact that I think it's going to work, him and LaVine next to each other, especially defensively, but we'll see. And if he can be a consistent scorer here and stay healthy, I think those are the two main factors. He'll have value in some capacity for the Bulls.
I don't think it's even arguable that That Parker is worth $20 million a year. I don't think anyone can make that argument. The Bulls, they had the cap space. Very few teams did. And perhaps offering that $20 million per season for a shorter amount of time frame is the negotiation they had to make, that Jabari and his team would have said, well, we're not going to accept 3 years at $15 million, but if you want to give us more for a short amount of time, then we can see how this all works out. That makes sense. But again, you said playing him out of position at the three, which is best position at the four, he's going to struggle a ton defensively. Larry Markkinen's already not a strong defender. Zach LaVine's already a horrible defender. It's going to put a lot of pressure on guys like Robin Lopez and Wendell Carter and Chris Dunn there. And then the other thing you've got to pay attention to is playing Jabari out of position at the three. Does that take offensive focus away from someone like Larry Markkinen? So how Fred Hoiberg handles that situation, how he handles the shot distribution there between LaVine and Parker and Markkinen is going to be interesting. But again, what you said with the contract structure, I think is important too, that it does give the Bulls, it's only 1 year. It does take them out of that running, as you mentioned, for taking on bad contracts to acquire assets, which is probably the way I would have gone. Do you think that this mentality of them not wanting to take on these extra salary dumps in exchange for assets means that they're done rebuilding and they think they're contending back for a playoff spot for this coming season?
I think that's exactly what it means. I think you listen to what John Paxson had to say after this season was over, and he repeatedly, multiple times, even at the draft, he repeated that the Bulls don't want to have a season like they did last season ever again, ever. And they felt like it was an embarrassment, and it took a bunch of steps back, even though, the fans that are connected with the Bulls every day and diehard fans understand what the Bulls were doing last season. But even that, they don't want to go through this process of going into the season where they know they're giving up already. And I think with the fact that LeBron James went to the West and the East seems more open than ever, you look at a team that the Chicago Bulls, they've drafted guys that right now we can't really call superstars or all-stars, potential all-stars, but they've got a good core. They've got a bunch of guys that are ready to play now and I think are hungry to win. So you look at that, and I think this move especially tells you that two things. It tells you that not only are they done rebuilding and they don't want to play for the lottery next year, but it also tells you, too, that they're hedging their bet as far as 2019 and 2020 goes. I think that they understand the fact that they've swung and missed multiple times on big free agents and superstars. And while they've pitched cap flexibility over the last 2 years to fans, I think this move is hedging their bet. Parker plays well. They find out that they're really not going to be in play for any top superstar free agent next season. They pick up Parker's option and they add another guy at $15 million, which is about what they would have left in free agency next season should they pick up Parker's option next year. But then it brings question marks. It's like Bobby Portis and Justin Holiday and some of these other guys are coming up on contracts, and you're going to have to make a decision on whether or not you feel Bobby Portis is a part of this future, like they've repeatedly said it over the last couple of years. You have to make moves on Justin Holiday this season if you can find a way to get assets for him too as well. So I think it's a twofold answer here. It's them feeling like they can be more competitive than most teams in the East, and with LeBron moving, it opens up a lot of things and how they feel about this core. And it also, I think, is a hedged bet on whether or not they actually feel like they're in play in 2019 or 2020 for a big free agent.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it, obviously. Now, again, if Jabari does play well, I think that so many things would have to go right for him to actually be worth $20 million either this season or next season, and I think it's almost an impossibility for him to get there. But if they have concerns about being able to spend that money in a different direction, then I can understand them doing that. But they are going to have $40 million committed to both LaVine and Parker next season if they do pick up that option. And I think both of those guys achieving that level of value at, been under 40% of the total salary cap seems an unlikely scenario. And then you've got that concern with those other players there, but they're definitely making some moves. I think what it's going to do, Jordan, and you can confirm this for me, is it is going to get certain portions of the fan base excited, because Jabari Parker's a hometown kid. He's a big name. He's a guy that averaged 20 points a game a couple of seasons ago. And some people be like, oh, look, this is exciting. We're going to score. All this, Bulls are back, playoffs, all this sort of stuff. That's going to get some level of the fan base excited there. There's going to be the other portion that goes, well, we just signed two guys who are coming off a combined three ACL tears to $40 million for this season, and they're going to have some pessimism. But I think the general fan consensus will be, hey, we know Jabari Parker. This is a good move. Let's get back to Bulls basketball.
Yeah, and I think our fans can kind of confirm after knowing the details of the contract. We put out a poll on Locked On Bulls just for a day, and we got nearly 1,000 votes. 74% of the people said they liked the deal, that the Bulls went out and spent the money for basically a tryout for Jabari Parker. And it's funny because you brought up both sides. You brought up the far left and the far right as far as positive and negative go. And I find myself asking the same questions every other Bulls fan's asking. While I'm excited that they're bringing in a young talent, that they actually went and spent the cap space instead of pitching us on this idea that there's deals down the road that may never come to fruition and saving that cap. So in that capacity, I'm positive about it. The one thing about Parker's game, I think, is not coming into question is his ability to score. That's something that I hear Bulls fans repeatedly use as an argument of why this is going to work and why he can play the three. And it's like that's never been really his knock, is he can score in this league. It's whether or not after two ACLs, that knee's going to hold up and he's going to be able to play defense at the three. We're talking about some of the best players in modern basketball playing the wing position, and can Jabari Parker play that? And is Chris Dunn a good enough defender to cover Zach LaVine? And is Zach LaVine going to put the effort in on the defensive end to be able to cover Jabari? And are they going to be able to switch?
It's definitely going to be an interesting season with the Chicago Bulls. And if you want to hear all about the Bulls offseason, their preseason, and coming up to the regular season, make sure you're checking out Locked On Bulls for all that information. Thank you, Jordan, for coming on. We'll bring in now the host of the Locked On Knicks podcast, James Marceda. James, some interesting stuff for Knicks fans through the Las Vegas Summer League with their two selections from the NBA draft, putting up two of the more, I guess, impressive performances across their time in Las Vegas. Let's start with their top 10 selection, their lottery pick, Kevin Knox. Of course, notoriously, Knicks fans are going to boo whoever they select in the upper portions of the draft. That was no different for Kevin Knox, but I reckon a lot of New York fans will be changing their tune after what we saw from Knox in his performances in Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I just want to take quick issue with most Knicks fans were not booing Knox on draft night. That's okay. We can't further this false narrative any longer, Josh. But yeah, basically what happened with Kevin Knox this summer league was the best possible outcome that you could hope for if you're a Knicks fan. He showed a lot more than he showed at Kentucky, at least consistently, like game after game. He showed flashes of some of the things he did in summer league at Kentucky, but he wasn't doing it nearly as consistently as he was. Granted, it's against, you know, lesser competition of summer league. But when I say that, like things he showed that he didn't show at Kentucky, it's just a really well-rounded offensive repertoire. At Kentucky, he came off of screens a lot. He was kind of posted in the corner shooting threes, but he showed a lot more off the dribble in summer league. He showed very explosive athleticism, at least compared to some of the things he'd put on tape. He showed active defense. It wasn't, you know, someone who you necessarily project to be a first-team all-defensive player type person, but one of his knocks at Kentucky was that he kind of fell asleep at times. He had very quick, active feet, so good to see him, you know, engaging on that end of the floor. He was boarding. He had something around, you know, summer league stats take with a huge grain of salt, but somewhere around 7 boards per game. Just jumping out of the gym. His shooting, you know, was not consistent, and I think a lot of that came down to the fact that they're not really running much of a structured offense in summer league. Head coach David Fizdale even said as such. He's like, we're just kind of throwing these guys out there, asking them to work on a couple different things. So he sort of, you know, wasn't in a offense tailored to his abilities, especially because Frank Ntilikina didn't play after the first two games. So they didn't really have a point guard who could get people in position. But when you're looking at summer league just to see the kinds of things that a player is capable of, Knox just showed himself, at least in flashes, you know, and against lesser competition, but he showed himself to be capable of lots of different things on offense that we didn't see too much out of him in Kentucky. And his athleticism, his handle, a lot of things seemed improved, you know, not leaps and bounds necessarily, because it's only a small amount of time after, you know, the college season ends. But the amount of improvement he showed across the board and all kinds of different skills is just super encouraging.
I think, you know, one of the things that we had, you know, concerns about with him coming out of Kentucky was just he wasn't doing anything at an excellent level. Like it was okay in certain areas. He had projectability. He was obviously really young. But we've seen so many players come out of Kentucky who have their talents and their wide range of skills limited by what Calipari does down there at Kentucky. And there, you've always got to give these guys the benefit of the doubt coming into the NBA. And I think that's what we're seeing here with Kevin Knox. Yeah. Of course, you mentioned the efficiency from him at Summer League. He had a true shooting of 48%, which is, you know, not good at all. But he also was doing it on a usage of 33%, which is nowhere near what he's going to be doing in the NBA, probably at any point in his career. That level of usage and that level of, you know, being forced to do everything offensively is reserved for Russell Westbrook, and probably that's about it, really, in the NBA. Not many guys are posting 33% usage rates. His defensive numbers were on par with what he did in college, which isn't to say it's great, but you can imagine that efficiency goes up as the usage comes down. But in terms of how this projects, we've heard Fizdale, you know, espouse, you know, huge amounts of praise on Knox even before Summer League. Do you think that he is probably at this point the favorite to start at either the 3 or the 4 once we head into the preseason and training camp?
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, the Knicks just don't have wings right now, and the other person that he might be competing with is you know, either a veteran like a Courtney Lee or a Tim Hardaway playing down a position, which, you know, Fizdale has said he doesn't really like those guys playing the three, and that's pretty much exclusively who they had play the three last year. You know, apologies to Lance Thomas, who I think we all know is not a starting caliber wing in this league. And then if you're talking about the four, you got kind of, with KP out, you've got, you know, Hezonja battling for some minutes there. But, I mean, Knox showed so much in Summer League that I would be very surprised if he didn't start, if not right away, very soon, certainly within the first half of the year.
That's exactly how I would be viewing that as well. But I think a player that perhaps, James, was even more impressive, even that's possible, maybe that's me being a bit hyperbolic, but the second round selection, Mitchell Robinson, was absolutely dominant, I thought, especially defensively. He was doing everything. He averaged 4 blocks per game across 25 minutes in 5 games, over 10 rebounds, 13 points, you finished at 67% field goal percentage. He was absolutely dominant defensively, showed enough offensively. And you talk about the lack of wings on this team. At the moment, Enes Kanter's penciled in as the starting center. They've lost Kyler Quinn. Porzingis is injured. And Luke Kornet is the other guy there at center. Mitchell Robinson probably is going to be in for a rotation role immediately. And I could see him getting the bulk of the minutes at some point this season, because he showed that maybe he should have been a top 20 pick or even a lottery pick with that sort of talent, off-court concerns notwithstanding.
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with you. And he just, you know, I talked about Knox doing everything you could expect of someone in his position to do. And Mitchell Robinson is another guy who just, you could not have hoped for a better possible outcome coming out of Summer League. He just, you mentioned his blocks, but it wasn't even just the numbers, although, of course, that's it. Just the way in which he would get. So I think he had more blocked jump shots. Yeah, he blocked more jump shots than any, that everyone combined in Summer League, I believe, was the stat. And he would show an ability to, you know, help off of his man. He'd be deep in the paint, turning away, you know, someone who was attacking the rim. Then he would recover to his own man out of the three-point line and block the shot. And he did this a couple of times. So the way he was going about that, just the raw natural ability that he showed was just off the charts. And shot blocking, you know, it's a science and an art, and a lot of it is instinct. And he just showed a great nose for knowing when the guy was going to be jumping, not falling for pump fakes, that kind of thing, which is a similar skill to kind of rebounding and getting the timing right there that sometimes you just can't teach. I mean, you can, you know, work on positioning and knowing how to box out and all that good stuff, but a lot of it comes down to this kind of innate timing that he's really showed is carrying over. And I don't think the guy, something that's exciting about him is, yes, he's raw, but he's doing all these things with his natural ability that will translate to the NBA, and he doesn't even need to become that skilled to be super effective, to be a great rim runner, to be a shot blocker, to, you know, he needs to work on setting some screens and things like that, but with just a little bit of fine-tuning, he can be a really effective player given what he's working with naturally.
Yeah, the Knicks have locked him into a 3-year deal, a really cheap contract, which could turn out fantastically for them. Of course, Kanter is going to be an unrestricted free agent after this season. So I think the Knicks, while they should be rightfully excited at what Kevin Knox showed and the step up he showed from what he did in college, I think that getting Mitchell Robinson in the second round and him showing that, yeah, maybe he could become a guy like Clint Capela. Maybe at some point he could become Rudy Gobert. Of course, these are huge huge steps forward that you're talking about, maybe there's a 1% chance of that, but getting to 70% of what those guys offer is massive for a pick in that range. And that's the sort of thing, getting two players and having them both show impressive skills and impressive development in this time is massive for New York in a season that is going to be a developmental one. You're seeing what they can get from Frank Ntilikina. What can Trey Burke offer? You know, what's Porzingis going to be like when he comes back? Having these two young guys, we go, you know, we nailed these picks. I think it's massive for Knicks fans and for people, fans of who want, you know, the Knicks to be good again in the NBA. This is a great start, and we saw some fantastic signs. James, people can find out your more specific thoughts on the Knicks, free agency, summer league, off-season, preseason by tuning into Locked On Knicks. But thank you for joining us here on Locked On NBA to discuss Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson and all things exciting about the New York Knicks.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh.
Now I'll welcome in one of the hosts of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh Bass is here. The Nets made I guess at this slow stage of the free agency period, a flurry of moves is what it would count as. They made a trade sending out Jeremy Lin. They acquired Kenneth Faried, Darrell Arthur, and a couple of draft picks from the Denver Nuggets. And then the Nets signed Shabazz Napier across the weekend. So let's start with those first lot of transactions, Josh, with Jeremy Lin going out to Atlanta as a precursor move so that the Nets and Sean Marks could acquire those players from the Nuggets. I don't think that anybody in the NBA community could see any negative with these sort of moves that Brooklyn made. So you'd have to be stoked with the moves that Atkinson has made recently, but over the course of his tenure as the as the GM of the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, completely happy with the trade. Going rate for a first round pick at about $20 million, and with sending out Jeremy Lin and acquiring Faried and Arthur, the Nets are only taking back about $9 million. And definitely for a franchise like us that's had such horrific trade luck with draft assets, it's great to recoup any first round pick. But yeah, we're really excited about this. Lin was a great soldier for the team for 2 years and definitely helped instill the culture, but it's just so hard to rely on him with his injury history and with guys like D'Angelo Russell being the face of the franchise and also Spencer Dinwiddie being a very capable backup that also can fill in as starter as a pinch. It's really good to have depth at the position, especially with Napier being brought in. But hate to see Lin go because he is a good leader, but on the court wasn't really going to result in a lot of wins having him out there.
I think one of the interesting things with Lin moving on is, of course, the Nets' new ownership structure and the fact that they weren't beholden to their new partial owner to keep Lin around, he's been on record in professing that Lin is one of his favorite players. So they're making those moves to make the team better, not to appease new ownership coming in. And I think it's a huge positive now acquiring this Nuggets draft pick. Look, it might be pick number 20. It could also be pick number 13. And the reporting is on it, Josh, is that if it doesn't convey this season, which is a possibility, that the Nuggets in a loaded Western Conference, if they don't make the playoffs, they could very easily have pick 12 and the pick is protected 1 through 12. And then the reporting is that that it would then carry over to 2020 and it will become an unprotected first round pick, which could end up being better, could end up being worse. But yeah, that's another win there as they acquire guys like Faried and Arthur, but with getting these selections in. And they've consistently made these moves, getting Damari Carroll last year from the Toronto Raptors. Now, in terms of Arthur, we talk about Jeremy Lin having his injury issues, and Darrell Arthur has those same sort of concerns with his knee. But Kenneth Faried could actually be a contributor to this team, perhaps as the backup behind Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or as a third-string guy behind Ed Davis. So he's not completely without use, and the East is open up. So there's a chance that the Nets do push up and get a few more wins this year. And Faried could be a contributor there. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible that he could be re-energized. I think it's a shame what happened to him in Denver, because after a very fast start to his career, kind of the two centers they invested in, Nikola Jokic and Mason Plumlee, he wasn't really a good fit with either of them and has his defensive limitations, but he's still a useful player. I mean, even though he is definitely overpaid, he's probably worth about $5 or $6 million a year, can definitely be a good locker room guy, good veteran presence, and someone that can contribute when he gets time on the court. So thinking about kind of the impact that a guy like Quincy Acey made his first year with the Nets when he was up for a cup of coffee for about 20 games, I could see that same energy being provided by Faried, even though they are different types of players.
Yeah, exactly. And it just gives it a little bit more flexibility in that front court behind Jarrett Allen and Ed Davis there. at the center position. Now, you mentioned it, and I mentioned it as well, Shabazz Napier comes in. I thought it was interesting this when we spoke a couple of minutes ago, and you were mentioning Spencer Dinwiddie as the guaranteed, or not guaranteed, as the backup. Yeah, a lot of people see it the other way around, that he's going to be coming in and running things, but we saw at the end of last season with D'Angelo Russell back from injury that Dinwiddie got shunted into a lesser role. He's on, obviously, a very, very friendly contract. Could you see, perhaps, that the writing may be on the wall for Dinwiddie in terms of being treated as a trade asset, enabling the Nets to stock their cupboard even further with Napier and Russell both there now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I hope not, because Dinwiddie's one of my favorite players and also a joy to have on Nets Twitter, a great personality there. I think it's tough for him because obviously the Nets have a lot invested into D'Angelo Russell, and he's going to have every opportunity this season to succeed or fail. So the Nets will have a better insight as to whether they want to keep him on the team moving forward. And Spencer Dinwiddie's minutes are probably going to be reduced. I mean, he averaged 29 minutes a game this past year. Don't really see that improving. I'd say he's probably more looking at 24, 25 minutes a game, especially because at the two, guys like Alan Crabb and obviously Caris LeVert are guys the Nets have invested a lot into. So Dinwiddie's playing time could get scrunched a little bit, but I think he's a really good player to have, especially with D'Lo's injury history. I think that he's going to be needed. So maybe they look to trade him at the deadline for additional draft assets or someone that's a point guard needy team that's looking to shore up that rotation as they get into the playoffs. But I would definitely want Dinwiddie on the roster for the first few months and then take a pulse of where things are at there, because I think he is a very good point guard.
What do you think that Nets fans should be looking at from the Shabazz Napier signing? Like, what can you, you've obviously done a little bit of research on him now that he is coming across to this team. So what can they be looking at with Napier, who had a career year last season with Portland and they rescinded his qualifying offer to make him an unrestricted free agent? What can he offer to this team?
Yeah, I think he's a very dynamic offensive player and someone who's extremely well-rounded. He's a pretty good three-point shooter, shot it at about 38% last year on three attempts a game. Decent at getting to the free throw line, good free throw shooter when he's there, can hit the pull-up, and really improved his finishing getting to the basket last year. Shot about 55% at the rim, which for him was a huge improvement over at least 10% because he was just god-awful before that. And a solid passer. Someone reminds me of Spencer Dinwiddie because he's not going to take anything off the table. He's not super great at any aspect, but he's definitely someone that can come in, give you serviceable backup minutes. And we saw last year when Portland had injuries to their guards, he was able to fill in a pinch and also be that excellent third guard that could play with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. So it definitely gives the Nets a lot of flexibility to have that additional ball handler on the court.
The Nets do have a lot of flexibility. You've mentioned a ton of names in that backcourt. We saw Caris LeVert running backup point guard for this team for extended stretches last season when D'Angelo Russell was out. And I thought that's when he was able to play his best basketball. But it seems with these moves, Russell, Dinwiddie, and now getting Shabazz Napier in, that they're probably looking more for LeVert to play as a 2-3 rather than a 1-2 that he was playing. Would you say that's a fair assessment? And do you think that's the best use of his skills on this team?
You know, it's a good question because I think LeVert's a really good player, someone that's competent at the 1, 2, and 3. I think on defense, he's actually best used at the 1 because his length can really bother opposing point guards. And while his shot is still a work in progress, it makes sense for him to have the ball in his hands because the gravity of the team is being reduced because no one really respects his off-ball shot right now. I mean, he did shoot 35% on threes, but that's really going to need to go up if he wants to be a credible 2 or 3 in this league. So I think his development is very important to the team, and they're still finding out where his best position is. I would probably lean towards the 2 because he is a bit turnover prone, so it's nice to have another lead ball handler with him out there, but I just hope he's not lost in the shuffle with all the new names being added in this year, and obviously, hopefully, a fully healthy season from D'Angelo Russell.
It's going to be interesting for this team. They are turning the corner. They have all their draft assets plus some other teams' draft assets now. Bringing on some solid enough free agents like guys like Napier and Ed Davis to be these rotational guys. There's still a lot of work to do, but things are definitely looking brighter now for the Brooklyn Nets and can start to really turn the corner with the Celtics trade in the rearview mirror now and these draft selections back in the pocket of Sean Marks with Kenny Atkinson there too. Build out that talent and show the developmental skills that he has shown with the players on the roster so far. Josh, thanks for coming on and chatting about the recent moves of the Brooklyn Nets here on Locked On NBA, and make sure everyone is checking out Locked On Nets for all your Brooklyn information. Josh, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you are subscribing to the podcast, and you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you're so inclined, go and leave a 5-star review as well. It's great in getting the podcast out to more people. Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at Locked On NBA Net, and check out our new Instagram account as well. Go ahead and like that. You can follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, and I do suggest you go and do that. I also host the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, so go and subscribe to that one over there as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.